We're back here on your Triple Threat podcast with a good one here for you today. Jabari Davis, Jameson Welch, and Jordan Buscarini, as usual. But today we'll also be catching up with NBA blogger Patrick Finlan, who has covered the Minnesota Timberwolves for various outlets over the years, as well as our guy Randy Cruz of the Cruz Control podcast here in a moment. We'll be tackling a couple subjects with each of these gentlemen that include the renewed super team talk, somewhat sparked by Doc Rivers' comments or recent comments about his team matching up evenly with some of the top teams. We'll get into KG's retirement and how it arguably leads to the greatest Hall of Fame class of all time in 2021. Some of the talk surrounding the potential player protests once the games kick off, as well as an in-depth discussion on Minnesota's chances in what could be another strong Western Conference playoff pack again. And on that note, I'll actually go ahead and open it up here with Randy Cruz, once again, of the Cruz Control podcast. And we'll start things off, as I mentioned, with some of that super team talk. Since the Knicks, your Knicks, they got caught up in some of this a bit earlier this summer. For those unfamiliar, I believe it was on Media Day, some of the Media Day comments coming out of Doc, where he essentially said the Clippers matched up with those quote-unquote super teams and should essentially be seen as on the same level. I won't be a hypocrite and bury him, especially when I defended Derrick Rose's right, his right to say this, but I will ask you, do you think Doc is placing even more unnecessary pressure on a team that has yet to play into late May?
I think just a little bit because, even me and you had a conversation about the Clippers early in the week, and I guess we kind of both agreed that, this year is the end-all, be-all year where Chris Paul has to get it done, Blake Griffin has to get it done, and if they, in the event they don't, how did that, reflect on Doc Rivers where when he was hired and people thought, oh, wow, Doc Rivers can lead this team to the promised land, and he did get pretty far last year, I'll say 2 years ago when they were up 3-1 in the conference semis, and ever since then they collapsed. Then they had big time injuries in the playoffs last year to both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin in that Portland series. So, like you said, everybody has the right to say what they want about the team, in a positive light that this team could be a super team in the West. But, Doc Rivers, the GM, has tried to bring on some talent to help out the cause of, Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, like Josh Smith and Lance Stephenson. But that didn't pan out. Those players are both gone. And now it's just, heavily relying on CP3, Blake, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford. To me, they did not do much to bolster a bench to, provide some heavy lifting of the scoring for both CP3 and Blake Griffin. Hopefully both players are 100% healthy, good to go this year, because I think, without both, they're not going anywhere, but even without one, it'll be pretty tough out west. So Doc, he can say the comments all he wants, but just know that, a lot of people are looking for the Clippers to really get over that hump and at least make it to the Western Conference Finals. That might happen. There's no Kevin Durant in OKC, so the window could be open just a bit, but it's still tough with Golden State, San Antonio. I can't doubt Russell Westbrook in OKC. So they might have an opportunity, but I think if they don't get that far this year, then, the question will be, will CP3 resign? What about Blake Griffin? Will Doc Rivers be back? So overall, I think they'll have a good season, but if they don't get it done, then I think it'll be trouble for all three.
It's funny, and again, we're talking to Randy Cruz of the Cruz Control podcast, and of course, we're going to get to your Knicks and some Eastern Conference stuff here in a moment, but I wanted to, ask a follow-up, based on what you just talked about. You're looking at these Clippers, and you're looking at both CP3 and Blake have the option to opt out this summer. J.J. Redick is going to be an unrestricted free agent. It really does have that feeling of now or never for them. What if your gut instinct from the outside looking in, obviously, you're in the New York market, I'm here in Los Angeles, maybe I'm a little bit too close to it. What's your gut instinct on them? Do you think this is the year for them, or do you think we may look back at the end of this year and question whether they, tried to hold it together one too many seasons?
Honestly, I thought their year was the year they were up 3-1 against the Houston Rockets, where not saying they would have won the championship or gone to the finals, but, you know, when you have Houston down 3-1 and a potential Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors, then, you know, in a seven-game series, you know, anything can happen. You know, anybody can win. But then again, when you're in the playoffs, anybody can get hurt. And that's what happened, to them last year, where I'm not too sure whether they were the fourth or fifth seed and both Blake and CP3 go down. And again, the aspirations are the Clippers are up there, they're top four, they got the best point guard in the game. Blake Griffin, a perennial all-star. And the question is, what is always happening to the Clippers team that they can't get over the hump, whether it's, you know, not being lucky, collapsing against Houston, you know, having the injury. There's always something going on with the Clippers, or maybe the people they acquire in the offseason just doesn't pan out. You know, questionable coaching by Doc Rivers, maybe questionable GM moves by Doc Rivers. So I think their year was a year and a half ago when Golden State first won their championship. Last year, they were in the mix with San Antonio, OKC, and Golden State, but now it's just, you know, I mean, I'm not a Clipper fan, but I'm just like, listen, you know, CP3 is one of the greatest point guards ever. He's got to participate in a conference finals, whether it's East or West, at some point in his career, and just try to compete for a championship. And I think maybe if it's not in LA, he might consider going somewhere else. You know, a Cleveland or someone that has a championship type of roster. But to me, as a fan, the Clippers just don't do enough to help out Blake and CP3, where they just don't get anybody to help off the bench. Yeah, they get Maurice Spacely, and me and you joked about that early in the week, but it's like that's nothing to really help them. They re-signed Jamal Crawford, but that doesn't help them as much. And we all seen it. When you win a championship, you got to have a deep bench, and we saw that last year with Cleveland. And the Clippers, you know, especially in the Western Conference, you need a full deck. You know, Golden State had 10 people on deck, and they lost five of their players off the bench. We'll see how far they go, but I think the Clippers, man, if it's not this year, then they might have to blow everything up.
Now, Randy, I know you're based out of New York and you're a Knicks guy. How would you feel about Chris Paul next season coming to the Knicks? He's a guy really a little older in age, but he's still a really good point guard. And like you mentioned, if they don't get it done this year, there's a good chance they break that whole thing up. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Chris Paul, Blake, and J.J. Redick are all able to go elsewhere, at least be free agents at the end of the season if they opt out of contracts and whatnot. If Chris Paul said, hey, I want to go to New York, would you welcome him along, or do you think he's a little bit too long, a little too old at this point in his career?
I mean, you know me, hey, I don't want to sound biased, but if Chris Paul says, I'm interested, or my plan is to sign with the Knicks, I mean, I'm all for it. We right now we have Derrick Rose and Brandon Jennings on one-year deals. We'll see how that pans out. But if CP3 decides to leave L.A. and then New York is a possible destination, I think one, New York fans and the organization should feel happy that a perennial great all-time point guard wants to play with the Knicks. But then again, on the flip side, it's like, yeah, you want to come to New York, but how close are you to a championship in New York than you were with the Clippers? And I know East and the Western Conference are a bit different. It's not as competitive in the East than it is in the West. So maybe getting to the conference finals or finals might be easier for someone like Chris Paul to go to the Eastern Conference. The same thing I felt about Durant. If he was going to leave OKC, maybe a Boston, or, you know, not being biased, but going to somewhere like New York can automatically catapult him into a top two, top three team in the East, and just go against LeBron in the conference finals. Same thing with Chris Paul. What do you want? You want to chase for the ring? Then maybe New York is not the destination for you. But if you just want to compete, then stay with the Clippers. The guy he's a grown man, 30 plus. And I think it's going to come down to what's the best fit. He might stay with LA. To be quite honest with you, he might not go anywhere. But if he wants to come to New York, I'll take him with open arms. We'll deal with Rose and Jennings, you know, later on. But if you put him on a team with Melo, who's not getting any younger, with Porzingis, Joakim Noah, it sounds nice on paper, but can that be a championship team? And if so, in how many years does he have left to catapult his legacy? It'll remain to be seen.
Randy, speaking of super teams, I want to talk a little bit about Chris Bosh. We'll go back to one of the original super teams, at least in this particular era. A lot of talk coming out of Miami. You know, we may have seen the very last of Chris Bosh. He seems hell-bent on getting back onto the floor. This is always a really tricky topic for me, regardless what doctors say. I've always had the opinion that a professional athlete has the right to decide when to go out on his own terms. It doesn't matter if we're talking football, basketball, doesn't matter to me. When you're a professional athlete and you have gotten to the pinnacle of that particular sport, nobody has the right to tell you when to hang it up except yourself. Now, in Bosch's case, things may be a little bit different because I'm not so sure that anyone will touch Bosch if his days in Miami are numbered. But I want your opinion on this. Should Bosch consider hanging it up? And if he doesn't, and he has played his last game in Miami, where may he go next?
Like you said, it's a very tricky subject. I don't know too much about the blood clots and everything, where how effective it can be on the body. But I think if that right there sounds a little to be cautious and everything, and I think the Miami Heat, I don't think that they're just going to go out there and say, you know what, Chris Bosh, we're going to clear you because we want you to play for our team. I think at the end of the day, your health is bigger than anything else. I think that's the first concern. I think Chris Bosh would agree with that. But if there's a situation where doctors are maybe clearing him or he feels good to go and it's like, hey, what's up? I want to play, but you got to understand the Pat Riley side and the Miami Heat side where they don't want to put a guy who's been suffering from blood clots who might say, I'm good to go, and then put him out there on the floor, and then, God forbid, something happens. And, that's where the Miami Heat are looking at. And I do get both sides, but if that was me, or I'm pretty sure any one of you guys, I think the health concern is first and foremost. If he, does not play a game any longer with the Miami Heat, does somebody else pick him up? I really don't know, because if the Miami Heat says we can't have him back, how can somebody else say, okay, Miami Heat, we see what's going on over there, but I think he'll be, cleared to play with us. I think it's very tricky. I think if that was me, I'll just say, hey, man, Chris Bosh played 13 years. He has two championship rings. He's a big perennial all-star. To me, I know he's still young in the game, but to risk my career, my life, to go out there and play the game that I love, I would say, I'm gonna take a back seat. I've done enough. I've made a whole bunch of money, and I'm gonna sit this one out and just make sure that my life is good to go.
You make fine points. You make great points, and I agree with you 100%. However, I'm a little bit more negative in this regard. Part of me can't help but think that regardless if Chris Bosh was able to go, the Miami Heat don't want him anymore. Like, it's just part of me that looks back on the last contract that he signed and looking at it, he's due 23.7 this year. I think that ups to around 25 mil next year, and then it's like 26 or 27 mil the year after that. There's a part of me that says even if he was cleared to go, even if it came out tomorrow that Chris Bosh has passed every physical and doctors clear him, the Heat would look for a second opinion, because from a financial aspect, where this team is at right now, his contract doesn't make sense. So I'm actually looking at this from a more negative standpoint, and I'm sure people listening are saying, okay, we'll give the Miami Heat, give Pat Riley, give this organization some credit. No, it's business. It's business at the end of the day. And part of me just can't help but think, regardless if this guy was ready to go or not, the Heat don't want him. And it's a very difficult contract to move at this stage in his career, regardless if he can go or not.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like you said, from a business aspect, if they can save, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think his contract was for 4 or 5 years at, I believe, 117. If they can say, as crazy as it might sound, hey, if this guy's going to be injured or ineligible to play, if we can save the remaining 3 years and $60, $70, $80 million off our books and off our cap, then that's the way we're gonna go. Because again, it's a business where they're already probably looking at next year and the people who to sign next year with the money they might have available for not paying Chris Bosh. Do they pay the remaining money to Chris Bosh, whether he's on the team or not? I have no idea, but I think that's one thing they want to do, where like they are concerned about Chris Bosh's health, but at the same time they're like, if we can save all this money that we are supposed to pay him to get us out of debt or have more salary cap to sign players next summer, then that's what the Miami Heat are going to do.
Right. Everyone's talking big names that are, you know, they're joining and whatnot. All the, you know, Rose, Joakim Noah, of course Noah's still there. Is there an unsung guy that you're kind of have your eye on that people may not be talking about, or for instance, people may be overlooking? Is it a Courtney Lee? Is it a Brandon Jennings? Is it someone else that may have been picked up in the offseason that everyone's kind of overlooking, but that's going to be very important come opening night?
Well, you know, over here, I guess everything is about Derrick Rose and Noah, and of course, Porzingis' second year, but. You know, to me, maybe not being as talked about as much are players like Courtney Lee, Brandon Jennings, and even them re-signing Lance Thomas. And I think, you know, Lance Thomas may not jump out at you guys or everybody, but he was a guy that was doing a very solid job last year, rebounding, a guy that shocked me with, you know, scoring outings. He was having, you know, seventh man off the bench, and you got him at a very decent price. I know we lost some other guys with Galloway and some other guys, but I like Jennings because, again, he's on a one-year deal. So is Derrick Rose. And if the Derrick Rose situation with the trial happens to be a distraction or take him away from playing, then you have, to me, a very solid backup point guard that can still get 15, 20, at times 25 a night. He may not be your past first point guard, but it'll be a guy that can create his own shot, can put the ball in the basket, can take the scoring load off of Carmelo and Porzingis, where they don't have to be dominant with the basketball. We know Jennings can be dominant with the basketball, but at least, you know, he has a direction where he knows what to do with it. Last year we had Jose Calderon, and everybody was just begging for him to not even play, or, you know, to do something when he's on the floor. And now you get guys like Rose and Jennings, that's going to be a big help to the backcourt. And last but not least, I think Courtney Lee. You know, Courtney Lee is not the all-star that we were trying to get, or a big-time named two guard, but a guy, again, that is playoff tested with the playoffs with Charlotte, with Memphis, and I think even with Orlando. So a guy that can, you know, spread the floor, can shoot the ball, create his own shot, and also plays defense. Like, at least you get a guy that can play on both sides of the ball. And maybe the Knicks do not have too much of those kind of players at any position where they can play both defense and offense greatly. And I think a guy at Courtney Lee's height and his size, and for the amount of money that we got, I know a lot of people were spending crazy amount of money during the summertime, but I think at 4 years, $50 million, to me, it's a bargain with the prices that everybody else was getting. So Jennings, Lance Thomas, Courtney Lee are going to be, to me, the factors. And Jennings can be an even more of a factor in the event Derrick Rose has to miss time.
Again, we're talking to Randy Cruz of the Cruz Control Podcast, and we appreciate your time, of course. Before we get you out of here today, being that you're in New York and folks from NYC tend to at least come across as even more patriotic, especially following 9/11, and that's completely understandable. But, you know, I specifically wanted to ask you, with all of the talk about potential player protests, how might that be received by fans at MSG? Like, are they going to start screaming on Melo if he decides to drop to a knee? What's your gut instinct on that?
Not just the Knicks, but I think, you know, all 30 teams are going to be looked at, and, you know, right from opening night of who's going to do what, how they're going to do it. Is anybody going to sit down, or, you know, wait in the locker room, or put a fist up? or just do something where it's a protest. And, you know, here in New York, you know, we do have to commend Melo for speaking up long a big time while ago about issues like this in our city and in our country. And so I guess if he happens to do something, I'm pretty sure the fans will be on his side, because he's the one speaking up along with LeBron Wade and Chris Paul. So, you know, these are guys that are big-time role models. People look up to them. And as fans, you know, we don't want to worship these guys, but at the same time, if they're going out on the limb to, you know, for a cause and trying to speak up in a big-time NBA fashion or an arena, I think the fans would be on Melo's side or just about anybody who happens to do it. It just – you know, I guess it all depends on how they do it, and it's not in a way where it's disrespectful or, like, you know, they should have did this instead of that. I mean, there's no proper way to do it. People can put the fist up. People can, you know, take a knee. I saw the Falcons and the Saints, they all held hands around the logo in New Orleans. So I guess people are being creative with it. They put in their own spin on it. I'm pretty sure that the Knicks will do something. Even with LeBron, the Cavaliers will do something. The NBA will do something. I guarantee you that. But just remains to be seen on how creative they are with it, how respectful they are with it, which I know they will be respectful with it. But I know once opening night comes, that'll be like the first thing people are going to look at. Who's going to, once the national anthem goes up, who's going to be doing what? Is everybody going to be standing up? Again, that'll be another major focus come opening night.
He is Randy Cruz of the Cruz Control Podcast. Thanks again for joining us today, Randy. Where can the people find your material? Where can they find you on Twitter and all that good stuff?
Well, first of all, Jabari, always great. Always a pleasure going on your show. I know me and you have a great time on mine as well, and always appreciate the invite. You can find me on Twitter at Randy J. Cruz, and the Cruz Control Podcast is both on iTunes and SoundCloud.com.
All right. Definitely recommend checking that out. Good stuff, Randy. Thanks again.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, we'll keep it rolling here on your Triple Threat Podcast. As promised, we are now joined by NBA blogger Patrick Finlan here on your Triple Threat once again to discuss some Minnesota Timberwolves, amongst other things. And I'll actually kick it off by asking about, let's see, how do I want to phrase this? What does KG's retirement mean to someone that has obviously been a fan of T-Wolves basketball for so many years? And I ask that, again, specifically for the benefit of maybe some of the younger fans that may not realize how dominant 04 KG was on both sides of the ball for the Timberwolves.
What he means to me is more or less that, I mean, it's kind of like watching your hero just, you know, not be in the league. It's got to be what Laker fans feel about Kobe Bryant retiring, I can only imagine. In 04, though, he was probably the most – yeah, he was the best player in the league by a pretty good margin. And let's see, average 24 points, almost 14 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.5 steals, 40 on almost 50% shooting, just a monster. And that team outside of him and Sam Cassell and kind of Sprewell, but not really, was just not that good. And he – put that team on his back and brought him to the Western Conference Finals. It was, yeah, sadly, that was before smaller markets got a lot of attention like they do today. But, yeah, it's tough, but I don't know what else to say. It had to happen. I'm glad he was in a Wolves uniform when it did, though.
Yeah, and I can certainly appreciate that. I know that's a difficult question. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of speak on it. I can tell you right now, I was there as a fan in that playoff series in 04. I think I was at game four. I'm pretty sure it was game four. And that dude was absolutely phenomenal on both sides of the court. I don't think people really appreciate just how strong, you know, I mean, he was always considered one of the greatest defenders of all time. But back then in peak KG form, it was just next level, because whether it was that ridiculous turnaround jumper that I swear it seemed like it came from like 12 feet up in the air, or, you know, the jump hook across the lane, you know, the guy was just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, he would. I was looking at his shot chart, and he shot 47% with his heel basically on the 3-point line that year. I mean, just a monster from the mid range. And they literally would run a 1-3-1 zone, and he was actually able to anchor the whole damn thing, which was unheard of in the NBA. He would just cover both baselines, and it still doesn't make any sense to me that he did it, but he did it. And after Cassell went down, he actually was the guy that stepped up and ended up playing point guard, despite being, 6'13" and having a ridiculously high dribble, and it worked. It just he had no one to pass it to, so his efficiency went down. Just a monster.
And Pat, quick question. Moving to the current team now, a lot of expectations, a lot of promising players, a lot of new things going on. Of course, all led by Karl-Anthony Towns. What are the expectations, or how are the young guys dealing with the expectations now? Because with a new head coach, it's a top 7 head coach in the league now, one of the most promising players in the league with a couple other young guys that are really good as well. Now there's expectations. People are talking playoffs. People are talking maybe 6th seed, 5th seed in the West. How are the team managing expectations, and how are the fans and media kind of managing expectations? Because it seems like in the West, after the first 3 teams, it's a free-for-all who's going to finish 4th-8 in the West.
Right. I would say that the team is dealing with the expectations more or less leading by Karl-Anthony Towns, who's just an unbelievable competitor. There's no hanging your head like, Timberwolves have done since, 2004. With major losses, I would say that he expects to make the playoffs, and he's going to make sure that his teammates expect to make the playoffs too. As far as the fans go, it's sort of like it's super cautious optimism, I would say. It's really hard to explain this team. Like, there's so much negativity about this team, just because of how poorly managed it was for so many years, and now everything's finally clicking, and we're all just holding our breath about this. And yeah, they could. I'd be pretty surprised if they made, say, the 5th seed, but a 7th or 8th seed is totally possible. They could finish anywhere from 37 wins to like 46 wins was probably my. It's a pretty big variance, but yeah, we're very excited about this team, and it's for the first time since they lost the Lakers in the 04 playoffs, because it's been just dreary since then.
Let's talk a little bit about the expectations for Karl-Anthony Towns here. Again, here's a kid coming out of Kentucky. I know there was a lot of hype built around him and what he lived up to the hype. We haven't seen a big perform like that in his rookie season, Shaq. So, you're putting this guy already in elite company. The expectations continue to grow. And let's be honest, even though we know that Karl-Anthony Towns is a true talent, I believe he's a once-in-a-generation talent, still – You have to wonder how a young guy is going to react with the elevated expectation. Now that the league knows that Karl-Anthony Towns, okay, this is a guy that is a force that we have to prepare for night in and night out. Now that they know he's going to be the guy down low for Minnesota, how does he live up to these expectations? And what steps does he have to take to make sure that he does live up to the expectations and he just doesn't become a flash in the pan one-hit wonder, which I don't think he is. I always make that perfectly clear. I don't think he is. I think he's a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-generation talent. But how does he take it to the next level?
He's just going to keep doing what he's been doing. Really, his only weakness is a lack of experience of being in the NBA. He's occasionally out of position on defense a little bit, but he's so long and so smart that he can just make up with it. He's gotten a lot of blocks after guys have beaten him off the dribble. It's offensively, he's going to benefit a lot. He's not going to be in Sam Mitchell's super scrunch scheme next year. He'll be shooting a few more threes, which will be nuts. Potentially this kid could go 50-40-90 as a center. That's what we're talking about here. And he's not just a great shooter and not just great on the block. He was number one in the league in ISO situations for synergy last year. He's just a freak. Yeah, I really am just I'm not worried about the way he handles expectations, especially just given his personality and outlook on everything. He's I don't know if you've read Zach Harper's piece on Carl Anthony Towns, where he's just talks where he just talks about how he has this sense that he's never been good enough, and it's just which I can't believe that, but whatever. It's just unbelievable. Furthermore, like, you know, he's so dedicated to his craft. He, like, we asked him what his favorite burger was in the Twin Cities, and his response was, "I don't eat red meat," which was absurd. And, you know, he's 20 years old, and he's that dedicated. And, yeah, he's an unbelievable talent, and I really have zero doubt that he's going to handle it, anything but, you know, stupendously.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that this guy, again, I don't think we're overstating that he's a once-in-a-generation talent. I say that
not
based
at all.
Off of the production that he had his rookie season, which, again, I mean, it's rivaled with Shaq's rookie season in Orlando. If you go back to, you know, 1992, it's been a long time since we've had a big put up this level of production. A lot of people seem to be selling already on Anthony Davis, and I will say the one thing that does worry me a little bit about Karl Anthony Towns, when you mentioned pulling him out and having him attempt a few more threes, I think this guy is best fit down low by the basket. I thought that Alvin Gentry tried to get a little too creative with Anthony Davis last season. In the early part, you had a team that was a little depleted, and it worked against Anthony Davis. And I think, you know, we saw what Anthony Davis is capable of doing late the season against Detroit. I don't know that Tom Thibodeau is the kind of guy that will mess with what's working, but your thoughts on Thibodeau and how that'll work hand-in-hand with
I think that defensive – I think – for one thing, there will be a lot more space on offense, regardless of how they use Karl Anthony Towns. So he'll just have more room to operate, no matter what, whether it be putting the ball on the floor. I can't overstate just how antiquated Sam Mitchell's offense was last year. It was just – I mean, it
terrible.
It was so hard to watch. But not just that. On defense, I think what you'll see is you'll see guys he's more or less going to get – well, I hope, you know, players like he's going to get Wiggins to break any bad habits he has. And he's just going to get guys to play hard, just to play super hard on that end and on defense. And what's going to end up happening is I think he's going to have just a it's just going to be a dream come true for him on that end. It's really hard to say. Like, the only thing I worry about with Thibodeau is just how many minutes they'll play him for, because Thibodeau just grinds guys into the ground. You know, he has to win every single damn game, which is good in the short run here, and just to and to help with expectations. But I'm so worried. Like, you know, we have something precious, and I don't want to wreck it. So yeah. But frankly, it was the best hire that they could possibly have gotten, and really, their defense was so terrible last year that, you know, he's pretty much exactly what they need just as far as a defensive scheme goes.
I will say one thing, Patrick, as far as Tom Thibodeau having to win every game for a guy in Minnesota, that's got to be refreshing, because, quite frankly, you guys haven't won too many damn games here over the last decade. So to have somebody there who wants to win every game, it's got to be refreshing.
Oh, yeah, it totally is. It's just, you know, you hold your breath that there's not long-term consequences. I mean, we don't know how to deal with this right now. We don't know what optimism feels like anymore. Like, this is completely new to us. I mean, how are we supposed to react to all this?
That's fair. Okay, so obviously Minnesota is an exciting is one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting, young core group to watch over these next couple of years. What are some of the other cores that you're really looking forward to seeing, maybe battling against Minnesota over these next few years as they develop, whether it's the Lakers or the Sixers or the Suns or any other?
I got to say the Jazz, I'm pretty excited to watch this, especially because they're within the division, and, you know, we'll see them four times a year. And you know, just it's not just that they both have really cool cores. It's also that it seems like Ricky Rubio and Andrew Wiggins really don't like Rudy Gobert. Just Wiggins go out of his way to dunk on him. And Rubio's thrown some serious shade against him on Twitter, which is, I don't know how much of a jerk you have to be for Ricky Rubio to throw shade at you. but Yeah. So I'm excited for that. And it's just going to, they're just two really fun teams. But yeah, the other one's probably the 76ers, just because I'm curious. I mean, I do love the core that they had. I think it took too long to get what they got, but here we are. But that's going to be a lot of fun. Trust the process. If got to draft three centers, got to, you just gotta. And anyways, the as far as and yeah, definitely the Lakers. You know that D'Angelo Russell is going to be a monster in the next few in the next few years. I knew some pretty smart people that thought D'Angelo Russell of Carl Anthony Towns wasn't insane. I thought it was, but I mean I think he's going to be that damn good. He's going to, you know, he'll be a perennial all-star. And yeah, it's going to be just there's a lot of really cool young talent coming up. I can't believe how good the 2015 draft is specifically. Like that, we're going to see a lot of stars coming up and, yeah, just sort of a changing of the guard here pretty soon. It's pretty cool.
Fully agreed. And at the opposite end of the spectrum, as we get you out of here today, let's quickly talk about Hall of Fame classes. As you know, on Twitter, I like to pose these questions. So I'll ask you, greatest Hall of Fame class, is it 09, which obviously included Jordan Stockton and David Robinson? Is it 2016, Shaq, A.I. Yao? Is it, you know, even 1980, Jerry West, Oscar Robinson, Jerry Lucas, or maybe you'll be a little bit biased. Is it going to be 2021, Kobe, Duncan, and KG?
It'll be 2021, I would probably say, because that also includes guys like Chris. It'll also include guys like Chris Bosh, sadly.
Amari
was a monster back in his day. Man, he was so good. It's got to be that year, I would say. Although I've, you know, followed that up definitely with Jordan and David Robinson for sure. That would probably be my other one. I'm not a big AI guy, but yeah, he meant so much culturally that if you picked him, I wouldn't argue with you. I mean, he just changed everything. I definitely have a bias, but my God, that I cannot believe that we're losing all these players all at once. It's going to be so weird next year. Just so weird.
Yeah, no joke. I spent the second half of the summer pretty much saying, well, my childhood is gone. Even my young adulthood is gone.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, I'm a grown man that still worships a guy that, that works in, that goes to work in, a tank top and shorts, but here I am. And Kevin Garnett is, still my hero, and just the way he played and as hard as he played. And I'm sure Kobe fans feel the same way. I've questioned what's Kevin Garnett going to do after he retires? He's not a normal person. He can't just go get a job.
I'm pretty sure both he and Kobe will call each other and just cuss each other out. I don't know. I question what either one of those two guys are going to do. Like, I know that, of course, they've got business interests, and Kobe's got all, the documentaries and all sorts of different bits. But I fully agree with you. What are guys that intense about life in general going to be that intense about?
They're just going to get a job at the supermarket and just cuss out customers? I mean, like, they can't do stuff like that. Well, I go to the supermarket, but that's me.
Fair enough.
I'll tell you what those guys are going to do. Whatever they want, that's what they're going to
do,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly true.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. On that note, again, Patrick, thanks so much for joining Triple Threat today. Before we get you out of here, can you let the folks know where they can find you on Twitter if they do that sort of thing?
My handle is at Patrick_Fenlon, PATRICK_FENELON. It's been a pleasure to be on here, guys.
We'll try to catch up with you during the season if you have time in order to check back and see how Minnesota's doing with all of those expectations.
Yeah, hopefully we're meeting them and I'm not just totally depressed about everything. Anyway, take care, guys.
Thank you. All right, guys, really good stuff there with both Randy and Patrick, obviously for different reasons, but we definitely appreciate their time here today. I actually want to ask you guys that question. sometimes we go back and forth about the stuff on Twitter, but we didn't actually because I haven't been around that, you know, quite as much. In your opinion, what is going to be the greatest Hall of Fame class of all time? Because to me, 2021 is by far, but, you know, folks would say that I'm biased.
No, it is. Chris Bosh is probably going to be in that class. As crazy as it sounds, I don't see a doctor putting their reputation on the line to make him play unless there's something we don't know. Now, I agree with Jordan. I think the Heat want to get out of that contract cap-wise. They don't mind paying him his money. They don't mind that because it's covered under insurance for, I think, 85 or 90% of it. So they're not going to mind that part, but the cap space, they want to free that cap space because right now they're in no man's land. They're not bottom five bad, but they're not really playoff good either. So they're in a really bad spot, and they're cap strapped. So they're a tough spot. They can get underneath that $25 million range a year and have that freed up. They'd be in a better spot as a team. So I think Chris Bosh also joins this class. I don't know if Amari's a first ballot Hall of Famer. His resume is pretty solid, but first ballot, I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked, but, man, first ballot's a pretty strong thing. I don't know if he's the first ballot guy. Not with this class. I don't see it, but if he is, if he winds up in this class, it's by far the best ever. Like, you can't – there's just not any other class that have the depth of this kind of class. I mean, when Amari's the fifth best guy that you're naming in a potential Hall of Fame class, you're in pretty good shape. Like, you're in really, really good shape, especially when you're talking about NBA players. So, it's 2021 to me is the best by far. Just the amount of guys that are going in and also what they represented. Because these were the guys that were after the golden age, after pretty much the Jordan era. You know, these were the guys that were the face of the league after the Jordan era in different facets. These were two of the guys that straight out of high school. They represented that era. So, in my opinion, this class means a lot more than any other class. And to see these two guys, pretty much KG and Kobe, were the two guys out of this era, the first guys to come out of high school and make it a phenomenon, a new phenomenon in the mid-late 90s, early 2000s, yes, this class by far is the best.
Man, that's really tough. I mean, you go back and you look at some of these classes, like 2002, I think, is a pretty special class in itself. You had Magic. He was the headliner in that. Lute Olson was a part of that class. I believe Larry Brown was a part of that class. You had Petrovic. He was a part of that class as well. I mean, that guy right there. Come on. Everybody knows the Petrovic story. So, and I believe, the Harlem Globetrotters were a part of that Hall of Fame class as well. And you look at their impact, obviously not on the NBA, but on basketball, you know, here in the nation in itself. That's a pretty impressive class. Just thinking, you got to go back 2016. For me, he's probably not top five. We talked about this on the show. I'm not a big Allen Iverson guy. Mm-hmm. 2008, I thought was fantastic. You had Ewing, you had Akeem, you had Adrian Dantley, you had Pat Riley, you had Dick Vitale. That was a very, very good class. Jabari, you mentioned the 1980 class, and it was Oscar and Jerry West and Jerry Lucas. Of course, basketball pundits are always going to point to 2009 because that was the class of Michael Jordan. And because of that induction, we get the Jordan crying meme pretty much every time anything happens in the world, in the history of the world. But to me, 2021 to me is going to be the greatest the greatest Hall of Fame class of all time because you look at where the game was. Before Kobe, before Duncan, before Garnett, I don't know that we've seen the last of Chris Bosh, but say for the sake of the argument, we have. You look at his impact with the Miami Heat, what he meant to that big three, and what that has done for where the game is today. I believe that those guys that year made it okay for guys like Kevin Durant to jump ship. I look at the importance of everyone's career, not just based on numbers. So for me, especially with Chris Bosh, that's going to go down as the number one class ever as far as Hall of Fame. But the other classes I mentioned, I mean, you can make fair argument there. Again, 2009 is always going to get mentioned because it featured Michael Jordan. This one, Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant, you had two guys that combined for 10 NBA championships. In my mind, the best player of my generation is Kobe Bryant. I got to watch this guy's entire career. I was there every step of the way. I fell in love with Kobe's game from the very beginning. I look at what a competitor he was, how he inspired people by stepping up and knocking down two free throws with a torn Achilles. Like, that's one of the moments for me with Kobe where I still get goosebumps just thinking about it. You look at the way the Spurs did it with Duncan. You look, again, I mentioned in Chris Bosh in the big three in Miami. And then Kevin Garnett. I mean, I think Patrick painted a perfect portrait of what Kevin Garnett meant to a city in Minnesota. And when you talk about fierce competitors, you have Kobe, you have Garnett. For this generation, it's hard to find two bigger competitors than those two. You'll never find – I never thought we'd have a bigger trash talker than Gary Payton. Please, Gary Payton's not even on the same level as Kevin Garnett. He's not even remotely close to Kevin Garnett. So 2021 is going to be so unique. It's going to be one of those moments where you better believe you're watching the Basketball Hall of Fame that particular night. Like, I think the way that the Basketball Hall of Fame is set up, it takes a backseat to Cooperstown. It takes a backseat to Canton, just the way it's designed. Because on any given year, you can have somebody like a Magic, per se, go into the Hall of Fame, and right behind him, you got a high school basketball coach. I think that kind of diminishes it a little bit. Not saying that those accomplishments aren't great and they shouldn't be recognized, but you don't get that with Cooperstown. You don't get that with Canton. So I think it takes a backseat. 2021, it's not taking a backseat. That's going to be Canton's team when these guys go into the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely agreed. I couldn't state it any better, so I won't even attempt to. I agree. 2021 is a year for all of those reasons. The uniqueness, you know, in the way that all of the each of those guys did it, each reached, the pinnacle. Obviously, Kobe and Duncan, a little bit higher. No shade to KG, no shade to KG fans. Big ticket fans, chill out there. But KG was also, absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. In my honest opinion, probably a top, and I don't do these rankings all that often. We talk about them, but I don't actually, the folks will probably notice I don't normally chime in because I don't, particularly care for it. I think KG is a top three defender in this league of all time. Overall, top three defensive player of all time. At least from 1980 on, because I can't speak to, the incredible defense that was played, by those older generations. All right, guys, fantastic stuff. Let me get some final shots out of you guys.
First and foremost, definitely it's good to be back in. NBA season is, it's coming along soon. It's coming soon. Preseason starting up. There's going to be a couple games out here in Vegas, so can't wait. Can't wait to go to a few games this year and cover and all that good stuff. But with that being said, with the NBA season coming up and after all the things that's going on this year in this country, it's going to be very interesting to see what the players do. We've already seen players and heard with players their comments in the offseason, but a lot of players have had a lot of time to think about what kind of actions they're going to do, whether it's during the anthem or during whatever it may be. It's going to be very interesting to see what players do, and I want to see players do it for the right reason. I don't want to see players doing stuff because it sounds cool or it seems cool or to fit in. I want to actually see players do something and actually be educated about it and be able to answer questions about it after the game, because the whole Colin Kaepernick thing has been well thought out by him. He's done this in a very smart and peaceful way. Some people would do it, and they would just be very ignorant about it, and it caused more problems than it brings along. So just want to see what NBA players, what they're going to do. Very interested to see what they're going to do. And, just open up the discussion more, because more people – need to know what's going on in certain areas and certain people in this country, because not everyone has the same experiences in this country. And it's very interesting that I believe it was the GM of the Milwaukee Bucks, said what he said, Milwaukee being probably the most segregated city in this country, which is very crazy, but it's very true. If you talk to people from Milwaukee, they have a lot of the same feelings, and you never would have thought that, but more and more discussions need to happen because change needs to happen, because it's just too many injustices going on around this country. And at this point, it's to the point where discussions need to happen. There's really no kind of time frame or no kind of action that's out of bounds at this time.
I could not have said that any better, and I'm glad that you addressed that specifically, because you just hit it on the head. The discussion needs to be had, regardless of whether it's uncomfortable for some, whether it faces some people to look themselves in the mirror and question things that they aren't necessarily accustomed to questioning. It doesn't matter, because when it comes to human life, and I don't, I'm not even going to make this into a political conversation, but when it comes to human life, that is more important than anything else. It's more important than, your stance on things. It's more important than, human life is the most important thing on this planet. And for whatever the reason is, it does appear that not everybody appreciates that, and certainly not everybody appreciates all human life. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Jordan?
Yeah, I can't believe we are actually at the end of September going into October already. It's crazy. It's going to take some adjusting. Like, this is the thing. A lot of us don't just cover NBA basketball. Me being in the state of Utah, I'm fortunate enough at the radio station that I work with where I cover the University of Utah. I cover, multiple high school and JUCO, squads. And so trying to get into that basketball rhythm, I think, is going to be a little bit difficult. But being back here on the Triple Threat podcast, man, it's as comfortable as an old slipper that you put on when you get home from work and walk around the house. So it's good to get back with some basketball mind and start talking about it because it's creeping up on people. Right now, everybody's talking about the NFL. I know in your neck of the woods, Jabari, you guys had one of the most hectic off seasons at the NFL that you guys have probably ever had as far as the NFL goes with where the game is at today and getting the Rams back. It's probably a little difficult for people to realize this, but earlier this week on my show, we started talking some NBA basketball. We had media day this week all over the NBA, all over the country. So it's getting to be that time of the year. I hope it's a smooth transition for everyone else. Start thinking NBA basketball. We say it's a year-round sport. In all actuality, it's an 11-month-a-year sport. You know, you take that 1 month once everything is kind of settled down, and then you try to get back into it. All the hype, all the talk of the offseason, the draft, and free agent movement. You know, it's funny. I was sitting in the dentist's office today, actually, and I picked up Sports Illustrated that had Kevin Durant on the front cover in his Golden State Warriors uniform, and I had to remind myself, oh, my God. He plays for the Golden State Warriors now. Like, it's one of those things that just, until we see it out there on the court, it's not going to click. We were talking with Patrick about this during the last segment. Oh, my God, there's no Kobe Bryant anymore. Like, we're not going to get to see 24 run out of the tunnel anymore. There's no Kevin Garnett. There's no Tim Duncan. Like, it's going to be the strangest NBA basketball season that I can remember. And for me, I'm one of those guys, I get excited to see players in their new uniforms. You remember back in the day, we didn't necessarily have press conferences that were planned, you know, a week or 3 days out. Like when Shaq signed in L.A., it was like breaking news. ESPN had to break into programming to go to it, and it caught a lot of people off guard. That's not what it's like today. So I really look forward to actually seeing players wearing the uniform. And again, just looking at an NBA preview on Sports Illustrated and seeing Kevin Durant in that Golden State Warrior uniform, it kind of puts everything in perspective. We are in for a crazy, crazy NBA season. So let's get acclimated to it and let's get rolling because it's here in just a couple of weeks.
I'm absolutely – hey, you know what? I was ready to go already, but Jordan, that little talk got me going. I'm ready for NBA basketball. Look, I'll be the first to admit this is my second favorite time of the year. My favorite time of the year is always May and June. I'm biased because my birthday's in June, but that's usually – and because I've been spoiled living out here in Los Angeles, that's usually the time when the Lakers are playing for something serious. Now, we obviously not over these last 4 or 5 years, but then, you know, just the same. This time of the year is fantastic. As you hit it on the head, we watch all the sports. Of course, we're into college football. Of course, we're into boxing and, football and all of the, and baseball's wrapping up. But for me, I love the start of the NBA season for that very same reason. The new players and new teams, the new faces, the new coaching situations, all the different storylines setting into the year. I know Golden State's going to get a lot of the attention. Cleveland will rightfully get a lot of the attention. But, kind of some of the stuff that we talked about on this show here today, you've got all those young teams that are out there, the Minnesotas, the Lakers, the Suns, the Sixers, the Jazz are kind of like an in-between team where they've got a lot of youth, but then they've got, they went out and added a bunch of veterans that can still produce. So they're going to be a lot of fun. There's just all types of storylines around the league that I really can't wait to get into. And so I fully agree. Let's do it. All right, guys. Absolutely fantastic stuff with Randy Cruz and Patrick Finland. For Jameson Wells and Jordan Buscarini, my name is Jabari Davis, and this has been your Triple Threat Podcast.